This is Greater LA. It's KCRW's show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
Welcome to Dodger Stadium Test Site. You will receive your results in 48 hours. Please self-isolate until you receive your results.
This is what it sounds like in lot number one at Dodger Stadium. If you want to see a stark reminder of the COVID-19 pandemic and the sometimes dystopian reality we're now all living in, swing by the stadium where the people sitting patiently in traffic are not excited baseball fans.
Hi there, thank you. Straight ahead.
Hundreds of cars are slowly inching up the hill, up Chavez Ravine to the booths of Gate B.
Hi there. Perfect, thank you. Is it just one appointment today? Do you have the other confirmation?
Dodger Stadium is home to one of the largest COVID-19 test sites in the United States. Up to 6,000 people can get tested here every day.
Yep, excellent. I'm going to take that sticky out of the bag. So you cough 5 times. That's just to get everything up. Then you're going to swab your mouth for 20 seconds.
But who gives those tests? They're not parking attendants or stadium employees. The people here in hazmat gear with the mouth swabs and a lot of patients are specialized helpers.
You know, my mother used to say, always look for the helpers. Anybody who is coming into a place where there's a tragedy. Because if you look for the helpers, you'll know that there's hope.
Most of these workers, dozens of them, are in N95 masks, face shields, and other personal protective equipment. They're not nurses, they're not doctors, they're volunteers with the nonprofit Community Organized Relief Effort, or CORE. And alongside the City of LA and others, they've helped churn out more than 1 million coronavirus tests since this site opened back in May. Now, who would voluntarily spend long days at the stadium parking lot confronted by thousands who may have coronavirus? Today on Greater LA, let's meet some of them.
My name is Marta Ivory. I'm 56, and I'm a 30-year veteran of the film business. I'm a film editor. I have worked on movies, television shows, you know, streaming. That stopped, however, in May. I can sit here and I can look at the news all day and get really, really angry, or I could just try to go out there and do something and feel like I've done a small part, you know, to help. And I feel like I have a responsibility, if I can, to be of service. And this seems to be, you know, a way I can do it.
Hi, my name is Chris Kringle and I'm a volunteer for CORE. I'm a first assistant director in television. I was supposed to travel to New Orleans on March 15th, and the night before, I was told not to fly. And so it was literally about face in terms of life just changed. It went from full steam ahead to full stop. You know, we realized that people are nervous. People have never done this before. They're not medically trained. You know, so we're just there to like make it a relaxing experience so that you can just know that it's all okay and that you can do this.
We've had, you know, people drive up and there'd be 5 or 6 people in the car. And you know that this is a family where at least one person has been exposed. And they're scared and they are looking for answers.
Just the other day, I had a patient who pulled up next to me and was really freaked out about the test. I'm Rob Miller, and I'm a volunteer with CORE at Dodger Stadium. They were not sure what they were supposed to do. They weren't really, I could tell, sometimes you can see it in their eyes that they're a little worried. And so I stepped back and I walked her through the test moment by moment. And as she was doing it, I could kind of see her relaxing a little bit. And then when we were done and I told her to zip up the bag and take it down the way to the blue bin, she broke in front of me and cried a little bit and admitted that she thanked me and said, you know, she was so scared.
And the weirdest thing we saw was people were coming up in Uber and Lyft. And I was just thinking to myself, it's like, can you imagine being that Uber driver just coming in?
it's forcing me to focus on kindness because you're dealing with strangers. I'm often used to dealing with colleagues and other professionals who you can be much more candid with and, you know, you can joke around with. But a lot of these people are coming through and they're scared. And it's the first time I was reminded of this. It's the first time that they have interacted. A lot of them have interacted with other people in a long time. And so having to re-access and remember that that these people need a little compassion and kindness is a good exercise for me.
For whatever job we have, it's very specific, the amount of PPE that we wear. We come out, there's a disinfecting protocol, right? It's very, very specific, and you feel very safe in that environment.
I put on all the protective gear. I put on an N95 mask. I put a paper mask on top of that. I'm putting a face shield on top of that. I am wearing long pants. I'm wearing a long sleeve shirt. I'm wearing closed-toed shoes, also putting on gloves.
I have to tell you, I feel safer working at CORE than I do going to Trader Joe's, you know, which is like a weekly run I have, right?
So a lot of the safety issues that we deal with is not so much infection as it is hydration. You know, when you're outside like that, there's no shade and it can be 90 degrees. And you know, keeping cool and knowing what your physical limits are.
When you come out of there, you pull off your gloves, like a pint of water comes out with those gloves. Underneath your gown, you are soaking wet. It is like you just came out of a shower. I mean, it's absolutely unbelievable, like how much water your body sheds. And so, you know, I don't think people realize that, even though, you know, maybe they've been in line for 2 hours. It's like, but these people have been standing out in the parking lot for 2 hours, right?
Just about the time you start to melt, somebody comes out there to relieve you, and then you get a break and you get to dry off and evaporate all the sweat on your body. And around the time you get evaporated and cooled down, then it's time to go back in and you stay there until you melt again.
I thought I was just going to show up and do a job, right? I did not realize that it was going to expand my soul. And that, I think, is one of the greatest things about this experience that I can say. From the connection, from the awareness, from the realization that you're actually maybe doing something during a global crisis that hasn't happened in 100 years. Do you know what I mean? You know, when you look back and you say 2020 was the year of the pandemic, how did you participate? I can say that I would be really proud that I showed up to volunteer for CORE.
I've volunteered in the past when I've been between jobs, and I've protested and I've been an activist as much as I can, but I've never felt like, until now, I was in the exact place that I needed to be at the exact time when I needed to be there. And having found myself there through a friend's simple recommendation, I feel honored that I'm able to be where help needs to be put. Lots of times you don't feel like you're in a disaster zone when a hurricane hits. You don't feel like you can go in and help people with the hurricane, but I feel like we are in the middle of a storm here, and I'm able to help in the middle of the storm. And like I said, it's an honor.
Just some of the people testing for COVID at Chavez Ravine. KCRW's Danielle Chiriguayo reported on that story.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Last week, the Democrats got to make their case to the American people at their national convention. This week, it's the Republicans' turn. Day two of the broadcast portion of the RNC starts tonight at 6 o'clock, which you will be able to hear on KCRW. Now, like the Democrats, the GOP convention is mostly virtual, but the Republicans did carry on some in-person convention business yesterday in North Carolina, in Charlotte, North Carolina. Sean Steele was there. He's a former chair of the California Republican Party, now a national committeeman, and in his day job, he's an attorney down in Orange County. Sean Steele, welcome.
Well, thanks very much, Dave. It was a lot of fun. Charlotte's a beautiful, beautiful town. People are friendly. It's just too bad we couldn't have a real convention there. But, you know, given the objective circumstances, everybody had to be extra safe.
I mean, talk about putting on a national political convention in the middle of a pandemic.
Well, it's funny. You know, where our technology allows us to fly around the world in minutes and communicate. And so it's much easier from pandemics to spread around unlike ever before. And we got a lot of vulnerable people that need to be protected. And so, you know, a lot of Americans have sacrificed to try to minimize the destruction of this virus. And it really interferes with freedoms that we've always taken for granted. So these are trying times. To get through it, minimal amount of carnage and yet still not destroy our economy. So it's a very, very delicate balance. But last night, I thought the Republicans, of course, I'm biased. I thought they had a nicely produced job. I thought the Democrats had a very well-produced convention as well. It's nothing. These do not substitute for real live conventions where you have real interactions, real networking, and a lot of side actions going on. So but it's the best you can do under these circumstances.
Not a whole lot of Californians represented in last night's presentation, although we did hear from Kimberly Guilfoyle, formerly married to now Governor Gavin Newsom. She is the girlfriend of Donald Trump Jr. She doesn't seem to have a very high opinion of her home state. Let's give a listen.
If you want to see the socialist Biden-Harris future for our country, just take a look at California. It is a place of immense wealth, immeasurable innovation, an immaculate environment. And the Democrats turned it into a land of discarded heroin needles in parks, riots in streets, and blackouts in homes.
Joe Biden's not a socialist, and I haven't seen any heroin needles lately. That's a pretty dark vision, don't you think?
Well, Stephen, I don't know where you live. I lived in Venice for 10 years. I've served my time. Like a guy, but Venice, of course, has heroin needles. If you walk down the Broadway,
meth houses explode in Iowa. So I mean,
yeah,
you know,
yeah, no, I know, but the urban chaos is something that is forcing a lot of people to leave. San Francisco is one of the saddest experiences. One of my favorite cities of all time, and you just can't walk in certain portions of that town. It's extremely unfortunate. Their tourism is way down before the pandemic. And it's just something that one party rule, and that includes Republicans. If one party's in charge too long, things corrode, in my view. And it's corroded very badly in Los Angeles. And again, most of California is mostly good most of the time. But boy, you get into those hard, hard, remorseless Democrat controlled areas like Oakland, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. It's not good.
Well, haven't we had that at the federal level, though, with Republicans holding the executive and legislative branches of the federal government?
Well, and that's, again, if you have too much power in one party for too long, it corrodes. And I'm kind of like a balance of power. I like to see not one side dominate the other, because there's something about human nature you got to be careful about. Right now, we have a split legislature in the U.S. Congress and split courts that are more evenly balanced now with Trump appointing judges. And so there's a lot of balance and checks. I like that.
How do you explain, Mr. Steele, that Republicans now have dropped to third place in party registration in the state of California?
Wait a second.
This was a Republican bastion for a long time. Going back to Ronald Reagan, but of course Duke Majan and Pete Wilson and so many other big Republicans, right? What happened to the Republican Party in the state of California, and why does no party preference jump ahead?
Stephen, let me correct you here. And technically, you're right, but the trends are changing. The party's growing. We're at 5 million members. We haven't been at 5 million registered Republicans in 10 years. There's the Klein estates are decreasing. Republicans probably at the end of this year will be again the second party. But there's no question that there has been a great out-migration in California. We're going to lose two congressional seats. We're losing and hollowing out our middle class in California. You know it. That hurts my Republican base. So all these great, so we're exporting Republicans to the rest of the country. And all I want from these other states are thank you notes, because we're taking good Republicans with families, many of them people that are ready, productive, want to work, but they can't get a job in California that'll be able to buy a $1 million home, because we don't build homes anymore in California. So home prices are staggering. It's a big state, 40 million. We have a lot of kids born in this state. People still come to California, but the war against the middle class is remorseless.
Well, Democrats will say that they are fighting for the middle class, that Republicans are fighting for the top 1%. And it's the billionaires and the millionaires who get the biggest tax cuts, who, you know, I mean, if that's what's going on, you know, then the middle class is suffering because of a lot of policies, not just Democratic ones.
Well, Steve, that's not the evidence. When you look at the inability to grow businesses, where you can't even, you have try to open a small shop and you have a regulatory nightmare. You've got minders constantly looking over your shoulder. A relentless taxing system constantly is, you know, the gas tax is probably one of the most regressive taxes in America. And the Democrats have made California the highest gas tax in the nation. It's screwing the working class, the very class that Trump has appealed to.
I do want to talk about the president is running for re-election. He's running on his record for the past 4 years as the chief executive of this country. And we've got 180,000 people who have died from a pandemic. A pandemic, by the way, that he said wasn't materializing when it actually was. Why are we not talking about the 180,000 people who have died from the coronavirus?
If you think for a single second that the president or anybody is not paying attention to the pandemic and the damage and the carnage that it's caused, Fauci said that you don't need to wear a mask. You're going to hold it to him. I've got a recording. I could put it on right now. And he made it clear in 60 minutes in March.
You're right. You don't need to wear a mask. You're absolutely right.
I know. You're going to hold him to that? Of course not. Things have changed dramatically. De Blasio said he should keep the schools open because there wasn't anything to worry about with school children. And it was at the last minute he decided to close. You want to hold De Blasio to that? Everybody miscalculated on a massive level how serious this was. And ultimately, it comes down that...
You don't think the president, though, the buck stops with the president of the United States? You don't believe that?
Oh, well, wait a moment. That's interesting. Why don't you ask me the question without making it rhetorical? Yes.
That's not rhetorical. Do you believe the buck stops with the president of the United States when it comes to a deadly pandemic?
Yes. And but he also did something very important. He also said it's up to each governor to make a decision what's best for their states. And we've had, that's why we call a federalist system. Many governors have screwed up, particularly Northeast governors, where the great carnage and most of the deaths have taken place in. Now, other states have more reasonable policies and haven't destroyed their economies. If the president tried to manhandle this, like Joe Biden wants us to be wearing masks in January coming up, you can't have a federal solution to something that's going to be different in every community and every part of the state. A decentralized answer is usually better than just one size fits all.
Well, by the way, you can hear the second night of the Republican National Convention tonight at 6 o'clock on KCRW. Sean Steele is national committeeman and former chair of the California Republican Party. Mr. Steele, thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiotakis. And finally, for most of us, 2020 might be shaping up to be a little less exciting than we hoped it to be. We're certainly staying home a lot. But that hasn't stopped Rena Strober, who has filled her time by making an album of children's music to benefit the blind community. It is a collection of Sesame Street favorites featuring some of the kids that she advocates for from the blind children's choir called Dots. It's called Imagine That, and it comes out this Friday. You might recognize this tune.
It's not that easy being green, having to spend each day the color of the leaves, when I think it could be nicer being red or yellow or gold.
Rena is a singer and actress. You might know her from Les Mis on Broadway. She's with me now to talk about the album. Rena, hey to you.
Oh my gosh. Hi, Steve Chiatakis.
What a beautiful voice. We've also got another beautiful voice. Jason Alexander is on the line. Another voice featured on the album. You might remember Jason is, George Costanza on Seinfeld. Jason, will you ever live that down, by the way?
Well, hopefully the album will redeem me from my horrible singing as George, but without that, I have no chance to.
Rena, I want to establish why you decided to do this album in the first place.
I went and made a kid, and once I became a mom, I started to feel this void in children's music, and I was losing my mind after singing The Wheels on the Bus for the 3,000th time. And I grew up on classic Sesame Street, and I just remembered the purity of the music and the simplicity of the music. And I thought, you know what? It's time to revisit. It's the music of Joe Raposo and Jeff Moss specifically, who are the original composers. And I just wanted to bring back their message and their simplicity with new voices, basically.
You're a vocal teacher, Rena, for blind kids. And I guess you describe yourself as an advocate for the blind, right?
Yep.
I mean, you do a lot for the blind community and low vision community. How did you get involved with that cause?
It's one of those things. Like 7 years ago, I decided I was going to say yes to every opportunity. And that led me to a job at the Academy of Music for the Blind as a voice teacher. I never thought I would get to work with the blind. But I said, yes, someone asked me to do it. And I said, sure, I'll figure it out. And I fell in love with that community because their connection to music is so much deeper than the sighted world. I've studied music my whole life and I'd never heard a connection like that of those who are blind. They just find a deeper place to sing from. And I was learning as much from them as I was trying to impart to them from my vocal teacher wisdom. And I've just fallen in love with them and their families. And I've seen the importance of advocacy and celebration. They're often not given the same opportunities in music or in life in general. So it's up to us to say, here's an opportunity. You know, here's an album. Here, you're amazing. So go celebrate.
Jason, how'd you get involved in all of this?
I know this redheaded actress who is, she's a producer now. She creates things. And so Rena and I worked together years ago on a musical theater piece here in town. I got to direct her and it was just a little love fest. She's not only a lovely actress, but as you can tell from hearing her speak for a minute, a lovely human being. And I knew she was deeply involved in her work with an advocacy for the blind. And she emailed me and said, I'm doing this crazy project. I hate to bother you, blah, blah, blah. You know, and everybody was always stepping on eggshells. And I said, this sounds like fun. And so I called her up and said, yes, come on, let's do this. It was really that simple.
You've been on Sesame Street before, right?
I did get to do so. I did one episode. I've worked with the Muppets fairly frequently. I did an episode of The Muppet Show, and I did something else with the Muppets. But I did an episode of Sesame Street, and I think I dealt mostly with Oscar.
Oscar the Grouch, the one who lived in the
Oscar
trash can.
The Grouch. I guess they thought George Costanza and Oscar would have a lot in common.
You're also, Jason, not new to the world of music either. I want to hear a little number that you did that saved in the Wayback Machine. Let's give a listen.
Quarter pound of beef on the hot side.
And the hot stays hot.
Crisp lettuce and tomato on the cool side.
And the cool stays
You were selling hamburgers back in the 80s, weren't you, for McDonald's?
Well, very briefly, because I have the dubious distinction of representing the only McDonald's product that went directly into the dumpster. even the McRib keeps coming back, but my product, the McDLT, went down the McDonald's drain, I'm afraid. So.
But listen to that voice. That voice really selling the beef on the hot side. And the lettuce and tomato on the cool side.
A lot to be excited about in there, Steve.
I was very excited. You really were. That was a nice trip back. What happened to the McDLT? It went, like as you say, to the garbage can, right?
It was a failure of beta testing. I think this was a two-sided carton where a bun and all the vegetable material would be on one side, separated from the hamburger meat on the other side. So the idea was that the hot stuff would stay hot and the crispy stuff would not be wilted by the heat. And it worked very well if you handed the package horizontally to somebody and they opened it horizontally. But if you put it into the bag vertically, everything from the top compartment fell down into the bottom compartment. And it was just a packaging disaster. But the packaging was the product. It was just a hamburger split into two parts.
But Jason, it started you on your way to musical stardom, right?
Oh yes. It was a catapult.
Rena, hamburgers aside, you're a mom yourself. Izzy Rose, I would imagine, might be too young to be on the album, but she does have some quality control, right?
You know, I was going to put her on. She's a little bit difficult to work with. She has all these demands about her dressing room. So, but she requests the album every day. Mommy, imagine that. And just for the record, I just want to let you know that my love of Jason and his involvement in musicals doesn't come from Seinfeld. Like, I saw Jason in Jerome Robbins' Broadway.
Whoa.
And I know him from Merrily We Roll Along. So when I was telling him in the recording studio, I was like, you know, I'm fangirling because you're a Broadway star. and I think people, I don't know, maybe they don't, but I like that to me is Jason. And so when I thought of this album, I wanted parents. It was important to me to have parents on this album. And Jason is just an incredible dad. But he also is the Broadway guy to me. And I think people like always think Seinfeld, but Jerome Robbins Broadway, Merrily.
Bless your
little
heart.
Doesn't get better
heart.
Than that.
My gosh. See that? Why do I need PR people when I've got Rena?
You don't need PR people. You have Rena and you have us. And I tell you, you know, you judge people by their body of work, right? It goes from McDLT to Broadway to Seinfeld. I mean, look, we all have our journeys, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's so, you know, it's fascinating. Rena's talking about, you know, saying yes to everything and not really thinking. I'm sure when Rena, when you started this, working with the kids, that you know, the idea of getting something for yourself, getting an album out of it, or getting anything that would feed your actress and profession and that part of your site was not even in the back of your head. And it is amazing how these opportunities that open our heart a little bit have residual benefits that you can't imagine. And this project, I know it's such a personal success story for Rena. She worked very, very hard to put this together. She literally produced this thing and created it and performs on it. But God willing, it's successful for her just as a creative project. But the fact that she's using it for advocacy for these children and this community, they're not all just kids, but this community of blind performers. It's really amazing. It's just, I'm finding more and more that I'm very much in the Rena Strober camp of saying yes when you can to things that are a little unimaginable and you don't know where they may lead at first, because the journeys that we go on as a result of them tend to be some of the most extraordinary ones we get to do.
Well, it certainly is. And Rena's children's album, Imagine That, comes out on Friday. Rena Strober, Jason Alexander, singers,
Thank you. Actors both.
Rena, you're a children's choir teacher. It's so exciting. Thanks to you both for talking to us today.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
That's going to do it for us today. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have yourself a great day.